listening to Independence West on VOA.
Barbara Streisand. We're going to talk about the U.S. military sexual assault scandal. We're going to talk about the demonstrations in Turkey. We're going to talk yet again about Game of Thrones, the HBO TV series. And last but not least, we're going to have a sports roundup with a French sports journalist towards the end of the program. We got Roger Muntu in the studio.
Robert.
We got Rohit Kulkarni by phone in this engineer's booth. We have Curtis Bynum, and at production, of course, François Sou, the irreplaceable François Sou. On the intern booth, so to speak, we got Lauren Sauce here and Ugoma Ihejirika here for the first week. Our summer interns, welcome to the both of you. In a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to Megan Carpentier, very dear friend of mine, and she's also the editor of Raw Story magazine, which is based in New York City, I think. And we're going to talk actually about a couple of big stories that have developed here in the United States. You may have heard, Roger, about this really disturbing statistics. Mm-hmm. Last month, the Pentagon released a report saying 26,000 women and men, I think, were assaulted in the military last year, which was a 35% jump from 2 years ago.
That's a big one.
Absolutely. And of course, now people are demanding action. The news peg for this week is that there is some action in Congress going on about this.
Right.
Megan, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much.
Listen, you've been following this story pretty closely, haven't you?
I have, actually, for years.
Yeah.
For years, that's good.
What is prompting people to act now? Because there seems to be an outcry I really haven't heard, the past 20 years. Because we've been hearing about scandals of that sort for the past 20 years. But now there seems to be more of a willingness to counter the trend.
I think in two parts. One is that it is just getting more attention from the media, which in a lot of ways, as the media is paying more attention in general to stories about, news stories about abortion and about rape, the trend is to continue covering them because Americans are reading them and finding out about them. And I think the documentary, The Invisible War, which was nominated for an Oscar last year, actually has a lot to do with bringing attention to the long-standing problem with not just sexual assault in the military, but the military's standing unwillingness to really deal with it in a systemic way.
Well, part of the problem, as I understand it, and I was reading the New York Times this morning, apparently only a minority of those assaulted in the military reported. I think the Pentagon reported last year 3,300 reports, while we're talking about like 26,000 people who were assaulted. I mean, that's a pretty staggering statistic, isn't it?
Rape in general, sexual assault in general, is a really underreported crime in the United States and abroad because of the social stigma that is faced by victims of sexual assault. I think in the case of the military, before 2005, if you brought a report at all, you were forced to go through the whole judicial process. And even today, those that do go forward, it's a judicial process that takes place within the ranks and within the military, under the military code of justice, and isn't in a regular courtroom trial like we sort of see on television in the States. So the ability to not go to trial means they don't face repercussions, and very often the testimony in the Senate and the House shows, and advocates on this issue have been pointing out for a long time, is the women that do report through official channels often face problems within their own ranks, and the ranks often will fold around and protect the accused rather than the accuser.
Well, another issue, and that one of the bills currently under consideration is supposed to address, is the fact that commanders currently still can reverse, they still can reverse rape convictions. In fact, there is a bill that has been introduced in Congress just this week, and it follows the reversal of a pilot's rape sentence by the commander of the 3rd Air Force in Europe. I mean, how much of what prospects for passage does this bill have, in your opinion?
I mean, the military is very opposed to changing the system by which they deal with sexual assault in the ranks, whether that is sexual assault, sexual harassment. They're just very, the military commanders are very opposed to changing anything and have testified in opposition to basically any changes to the way the system currently doesn't function effectively. Whether that is something that's overridden by Congress. You know, Congress is very often not keen to override the wishes of military commanders for various reasons up to and including national defense. But I think the statistics, as you pointed out, are so overwhelming, and the military's ability to deal with these charges is so clearly lacking that some changes are going to get made, whether the military likes it or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's another bill that is supposed to help survivors of military sexual assault more easily get disability benefits. But I understand that this bill may face an uphill battle in Congress, though.
Well, I think at this point, with 10 years effectively into two wars, the military, the veteran system and the veterans benefit system is really overwhelmed. And we see, outside of sexual assault victims, people are having their cases denied. People are seeing their disabilities downgraded. They're waiting. They have long wait times to even get into the disability system. And even when they're suffering from war wounds, specifically. So, cover the vast, vast number of men and women who have been sexually assaulted in the military, who face problems like PTSD, who in many cases were severely injured by their own comrades, as you see if you watch the documentary Invisible War. They're not eligible for disability benefits because the military says that rape isn't basically a problem with their job, that it wasn't an injury that occurred on the job, even though it generally was an injury that occurred on the job. So it's effectively they're debating whether they want to spend the money to help these certain kinds of soldiers heal, and it's really sad.
Now, let's go on briefly to another story. Before we do that, even, let me remind our listeners that you're the editor of Raw Story, which is an online magazine, therawstory.com. Another story on which the Raw Story is reporting today is the U.S. intelligence surveillance program. The Guardian broke the story yesterday. The New York Times and other big newspapers are reporting extensively on it this morning, and that being that U.S. intelligence agencies are apparently mining data from major online companies and social sites like Facebook and things of that sort. In your view, how much pressure does that create for the Obama administration and potentially unwelcome pressure, of course?
Well, what's interesting is a lot of Americans, years ago were told that this was a possibility under the Patriot Act and with the secret court system that was set up to monitor Americans. And essentially, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, Americans by and large dismissed these concerns because they didn't think they applied to them. And now Americans are coming to realize that, the data shows that, in fact, the government is collecting, the research shows that the government's collecting data on everybody. At this point, I'm actually speaking to you on my cell phone from Verizon Wireless, so the government knows that I'm on the phone to a radio station right now.
Yeah, not only that, but you're talking specifically about, Verizon Wireless, talking about cell phones, but also, does that mean specifically that they're collecting our messages on Facebook, maybe even our passwords, things of that sort?
Absolutely. There's a lot of evidence that they effectively have, standing surveillance orders with every major web provider, every major email provider. And they say that we should effectively, as Americans, trust them, that they're only looking at information that doesn't apply to American citizens. On the other hand, they won't release any details of the program, and they say that it's important to keep the details secret, so we just have to take them at their word.
Now, your previous comments implied that there is, in fact, an outcry, a public outcry about this program, but the fact is political leaders are not exactly throwing stones at the administration, right? Even members of the opposition Republican Party here in the United States said basically the program was justified, if you heard their comments yesterday.
Yes. Republicans were the ones who put these programs in place. The standing order with Verizon Wireless that The Guardian reported on has been in place since 2006 and is renewed every 90 days since 2006. The president himself, while in the Senate, voted for some of these programs. So, Republicans are not really in a lot of places to cast stones. I think you see some like Rand Paul saying that this is overreaching. I think you see some Democrats like Ron Wyden, who's long been a privacy advocate, you know, saying that this is overreaching by the administration, the American people deserve to have answers about what it is that the government is collecting and storing on them information-wise. And I think as a journalist, you know, the fact that the government is storing information and would be looking at my calls if I had a source, a whistleblower in another country, you know, that's pretty terrifying.
Okay, one last question, Megan. What are the major stories you're working on today, the other major stories?
Some of the stuff that we're looking at today, I'm actually writing, in the process of writing about a First Amendment case in California where a prisoner had ordered a rather pulpy novel, and the prison guards took it away from him and said that it was considered obscene. And the appeals court ruled recently that, in fact, he had the right because it's not government's position. Government shouldn't take a position on which literature is good, only that it is literature.
Okay. Well, Megan, thank you very much for talking to us. We're going to keep following those issues, so let's do it again before too long.
Okay. Thank you so
much. All right. Thanks. Take care, Megan. Listen,
bye.
Before we go to the music, I got to tell you, Roger, we are witnessing the transformation of Roger Muntu, who showed up on time for the show for the second week in a row. I mean, it's
let's
rather
see
extraordinary.
Let's see what Roy think about
it. I know.
Roy,
that's, you know.
Yeah,
look. When you're not in the studio, Rory, that's my job. Okay, I need to make sure that Robert's behaving in the studio. He's not standing today,
do
so
I
that's
look,
a good thing.
Do I look like someone who would behave in the studio?
Put this topic forward. Are you guys really surprised that the government is keeping tabs on phone calls and emails?
Yeah,
and
Let's put it this way. I don't make assumptions. Let's put it this way.
Okay.
You know, one way or the other.
This is some serious stuff going on. I mean,
well, I suppose the question is going to be what, you know, does that mean, you know, politically for the administration? I mean, certainly, as far as I can tell, most, you know, Republican leaders are siding solidly with the administration right now. But is that going to present a major problem, you know, for the ruling party in upcoming election cycles, you know, and again, I'm not making any assumptions right there.
But you never know.
I mean, for me, I would rather be secured than, you know, than anything else. So as far as it's concerned with the security, I'm really happy with that.
On this cheerful note, you're listening to Independence West, and I'm still Robert D.
Get down on the floor. Experience that moves you can't ignore. But something about this beat that's got me hooked. Come over here and take a closer look. 'Cause I can't get enough. I can't get enough. I can't stay on the ground. Whoa, I can't get enough. I can't get enough. This is taking me now. It's just for kicks, just for the thrill. I got this high without taking a pill. This groove has got me way over the sun. I'm dancing like I am the only one. 'Cause I can't get enough. I can't get enough. I can't stay on the ground. Whoa, I can't get enough. I can't get enough. This is taking me now. Taking me higher, higher, higher up the ground.
Okay, so gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I should say, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to Martin Ward, who's a very interesting person. He describes himself as a stand-up comedian, as a comedy writer. He's studying sociology at the North National University of Ireland at Galway, which is in Western Ireland, and he studies diversity and lots of other topics. So fascinating individual, really. And he's graciously agreed to come on the show to talk about Game of Thrones, a series we talked about at the very beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. We had the next to last episode of the season this past Sunday. Very graphic thing. I don't want to give any spoilers, but some of the major characters were wiped off, so to speak, the script.
A sad ending, pretty much.
Very sad. So half of America basically committed suicide. The other half shaved their heads. And so we have utter and complete chaos and mourning and desolation here in the United States, which is why, without further ado, we're going to welcome Martin Ward in Galway, Ireland. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Robert.
So it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Let me ask.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, of course. Let me ask you this. How much of this season of Game of Thrones have Irish viewers seen? Because we've had 9 of the 10 episodes so far here in the States.
Well, we're up to the same level as you guys at the moment. So, you know, with that last one that happened with the wedding. So we've all watched that, and it's all over Facebook, and everybody's shocked and going crazy about it, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the level of shock seems to be the same in Ireland as it is here in the United States, because everyone I've spoken to commented on it on Facebook within minutes of it happening and said, I've gasped in horror at what I just saw. I mean, things of that sort. Is it pretty much the same feedback you've gotten?
Yeah, definitely. You know, for me, like, I was still shaking afterwards. I was like, what the hell did I just witness? You know, it was crazy. It was like a Greek tragedy on crack cocaine type of thing. You know, I was sitting there watching, like, no way. You know, this must be a dream sequence. And then, boom, they're all gone.
You know, a Greek tragedy on crack cocaine, that's definitely going to make it to our Twitter feed. You know, I'm going to retweet that one ad nauseum. I need to tell you, I found the early part of the season very slow, but the show's gotten a lot better. How do you view it?
Well, I didn't think it was bad to begin with. I just think that, you know, it was so well written, it was so well directed, you know, it was so well laid out for us as viewers that it started off what seemed to be slow, but it was more or less gaining momentum the whole way along. You know, it was slow for a reason, and that reason was the fact that we nearly, you know, vomited up our dinner when we saw the wedding scene, you know?
Yeah.
It was to build us up to that, the big shock moment, and I think it did it quite well.
Well, you know, when you have an actress like Diana Rigg, who's going to play, you know, Kim Joffrey's mother-in-law-to-be, you use her. And yet, see, I think it shows you something about the richness of the books and the richness of the scripts. You have so many characters, you have so many well-developed characters, you have so many interesting characters that you can't really do them justice on the screen. You see what I'm saying?
I definitely, and you know what, from the very start, when the Mother of Dragons came on the scene and that started to develop, I knew that, you know, the way it was laid out, for the only way the viewers are going to have empathy for the characters is either for Robb Stark or for, you know, the lovely Mother of Dragons and her lovely little children, you know. So that already it was going to be one of those deciding factors, who are you going to root for, because eventually they are going to come head-to-head. So now I think what's been done very cleverly is, you know, they've taken away one aspect and now you're left rooting for the one person that you want to win.
Absolutely. I mean, she has really come into her own. I have to say,
wow, and she's so hot, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you couldn't get a better person to play the mother of a dragon, because that girl is flaming hot. You know, she is so cool, and she's such a great actor. You know, like, even actually her co-actor Ian Glen, another fantastic guy. You know, and has done a lot of stuff around Ireland as well, so he'd have a lot of fans over in this country. And you know, we haven't been disappointed at all.
Well, speaking of Irish actors, I mean, obviously Jack Gleeson plays King Joffrey, and he's a 23-year-old Irishman. Now, yourself are a stand-up comedian, so you're in the arts and entertainment business. Do you know of other Republic of Ireland actors who are in the series?
I don't really, to be honest. I know a few of my friends would have been extras, and of course, Ian Glen would have done a lot of Irish movies, and Actually, coincidentally, next week I will be meeting Ian Glen on another movie he's doing in Ireland, which I am actually a part of. So it's all tying in quite well, you know. And in regards to Jack Gleeson, he's probably the only Irish person that I want to smack full force into the face, you know, after I see him acting that character. I just want to kick him.
But, you know, it's funny you should say that, because when we first spoke about Game of Thrones, at the very beginning of the season, we had this American journalist who met with the producers of the series. And you know what she told us? She told us their fear was that someone was going to do exactly that. Even though he's the nicest guy possible, but he plays so convincingly, you know, and he comes off as such a complete psychopath, you know, that they are afraid that someone is going to go and have a go at him somewhere in a pub or something of that sort. I mean,
well, I don't think that's going to happen in reality. Like, going back to Ian Glen, you know, like, the last movie I watched with him in it was only quite recently, but it's actually an old movie where he played a murdering priest where he killed a young guy in a bar stool, you know. And when I met him, I was thinking, do I still want to kick you in the eye? I don't know. So, like, when a character develops that much and you have that such strong emotions towards them, then obviously they're definitely doing their job right, because, like, that's the way they're created. They're created to get that feeling from the viewer, to make you feel that way about them.
You know, I have to say,
they're doing a great job to make them feel like that.
You know, I have to say, we don't see very many Irish movies here in the States, and when we do, they're likely to be at film festivals or at what we call art house theaters here in the United States. But I've got to caught a few over the years. I mean, one was The Guard with Brendan Gleeson a couple of years ago. In Bruges, you know, got a following. Yes, I mean, Brendan Gleeson is an excellent actress. I've only seen 3 or 4 Irish movies, to be perfectly honest. And you get the feeling, well, once, of course, 5 or 6 years ago. But you get the feeling that, you know, there's really this wonderful trove of excellent writers, actors, directors, but I don't get the feeling that Irish cinema really has taken off in any way. I mean, how do you view it? Is it due for a takeoff sometime?
It's exactly like that. Well, it's like, okay, for instance, let's just talk about the entertainment sector, you know, and things like that. For me, just doing stand-up comedy, and I'm actually trying to break into the acting at the moment. I've always done script writing. I think it's you know, even my name is Ward, which in Gaelic is Machan Bord, which translates as son of the bard or poet. You know, so there's a lot of history with Irish people, Oscar Wilde, James Joyce, you know, like, writing is a massive thing in Ireland. Now, unfortunately, because it's a small country, and because, you know, financially they just couldn't support, you know, the big blockbusters and things like that. But, you know, Irish cinema is picking up, you know, in some small sense, but it will eventually get there. We do have some pretty good actors. I just think a little bit more investment in the writers will create a lot more Irish movies. Coincidentally, actually, I think Mel Gibson is doing one in Vikings coming up soon. I think they've already started looking for cast and that, you know. So these are things that's going to happen, you know. And, like, of course, Braveheart was filmed in Ireland, you know, up in County Meath.
Yeah, of course. The Mel Gibson blockbuster from, like, the mid-90s. Yeah, I remember that, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so like, you know, in time, I think it will happen. At the moment, you know, the stand-up comedy for me, like, I come from the Irish travelling community, so I'm actually the only Irish travelling comic in the world. I don't have anyone to look to and say, hey, am I doing this right? Or, you know, what direction should I go? So in regards to development for myself, it's quite hard. But hopefully now with the acting and getting involved with different producers and directors, I might be able to break in that way.
I must point out also that you're a very multi-talented man, and you participate in a radio show called Cultural Shots, I think it was, right? I mean, first of all, you have an astonishing variety of interests, I have to say. I mean, I mentioned that you're doing research on, you know, according to an article that I've read, that you're doing research, you know, as part of your studies on the LGBTQ communities in Ireland, but also you're part of this radio show, and you talk about an astonishing variety of topics, don't you? Tell us a bit about that.
Well, if you wanted to talk about the radio shows, I did one on LGBT members within the Irish travelling community. Now, the Irish travelling community is about 40,000 people in Ireland, and they're the most discriminated members of society within Ireland. When you have a downtrodden community, there's usually a lot of, different areas within the community then that would be discriminated against. So, for instance, there would be people who would, you know, be members of the LGBT community or, you know, transgender, especially, you know, things like that. So I've always had an interest in human rights, and I've always wanted to give a voice to the voiceless, basically, you know, because that's awesome. I know what it was like for myself growing up as a traveller and, you know, facing discrimination everywhere I go, and even getting a job is proving to be extremely difficult for me, even at the age of 28. And even though I'm in university, I do have so much experience, you know. And some of the other stuff that I touched on would have been, you know, traveler women in education, because, of course, one of the greatest ways of overcoming discrimination is through education, because when you're on an educated level, you can tackle things at the core, you know, within the establishment and the system itself. So I've always had an interest in exposing these type of things and different types of discrimination. And it wouldn't necessarily always be about the Irish travelling community, because I did go to Budapest in Hungary last year, and I studied human rights training there with the Roma community, which would be
absolutely
gypsies,
of course.
I think it's Roma.
Lots of discrimination against them. My goodness, I mean that's a long-standing topic.
And I have to add, Robert, that but him being an actor would be great for him to actually, you know, show it, on the screen or like a radio show or something.
In other words, the experience of traveling.
And seeing it, right?
Yes, indeed. I'm sorry. We interrupted you, but carry on, Martin, please.
Oh, no. You interrupted me, but it was quite apt, to be honest about it. It was a great point, because it is the reason why I'm trying to get into acting, because eventually I do want to be able to bring a script together and get some actors together and do a lovely story about the traveling community to show exactly what it is like. Because, of course, down to the years, like, I don't know if you know, there's an old movie called The Field. And like even the travellers in that, they were depicted as basically the rats of society, you know. So, like, we're already facing all this, and media is so strong. And, you know, when media has been used in the wrong way and you're being misrepresented and misconceptions are being sold as, you know, conceptions and as factual pieces about a community, you know, the media is so strong, especially in such a small country. The media is so strong, and if you allow them to, you know, depict you in the wrong way, and if you leave them unchecked, that's just going to be commonplace then, you know. So for myself, I always took, like, for me, starting off in stand-up comedy was I wanted to break down the barriers between my community and the settled community, which would be the non-travelling community. And through that, I used to do self-depreciating humour, because I wanted to give a way that the audience could laugh at a traveller but know why they're laughing and then feel stupid for laughing, because it's so, you know, sensationalist comedy, you know, like you could never believe that some of this stuff is true about travellers.
But one thing I've got to say, Martin, I mean, I wish you every success in your endeavours, and what you say is very important, but I find you so unbelievably engaging as a speaker. I have to say, I have a short attention span, you know, you've been speaking for several minutes, and I have not lost a word of what you said, even though I have a short attention span and everything. Incredibly engaging speaker. Listen, before we go, because we have other guests to talk to, can you point us to a website, you know, so that people can learn more about your initiatives on behalf of traveling peoples and about your other interests, generally speaking?
Yeah, because I'm actually very interested on seeing some of his work.
Yeah, you know? Roger has his iPad, as always, you know, in the studio, so he's going to go look it up right now. But, I mean, where should we go to learn more about what you're doing and about your concerns, including for traveling people?
Well, there's definitely a few different places. You know, first of all, I suppose follow me on Twitter is at Martin Beans. Martin Beans is my stage name.
With a Z.
MartinBeanz.
Yeah.
So that's at Martin Beans on Twitter. And then, of course, I have a blog as well, which is www.martinbeanzward. So it's martinbeanzward.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And if you get on that, I have some of my comedy articles in that, you know, the take of an Irish traveller on society, I suppose. And, I do, you know, jump into some different things that would come up within the travelling community, and especially weddings. Your weddings are massive. Like, even in the States at the moment, actually, you got that American gypsy wedding thing, you know?
No, I was not aware of that at all.
Oh,
I was absolutely not aware of it.
I know exactly what he's talking about.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I do watch it.
Okay, so Roger will tell me then.
That's funny. It's amazing.
And then I think that's on TLC, actually, or I'm not sure. I think it's on TLC. But at the moment, I'm on another program called A Gypsy Life for Me, and I perform my stand-up comedy on that.
Awesome.
And that's on DSTV, I think it is over there. And
yeah.
TLC, or Sky Biography Channel is another one.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can catch me there, you know, on Facebook as well, Martin Beans Ward. You get the same thing again. So, you know, all your listeners, all your guys, you can add me away. You can ask me anything you want to know about the Irish travelling community, and I'd be more than happy to help. Other than that, if you want to check up an organisation, there's the Irish Traveller Movement on Facebook. Fantastic group of guys and very engaging also.
Okay. Well, this is thank you very much, Martin, for helping make Independence West into the primary source for all things Martin Beans and all things Martin Ward. So,
thanks
listen,
so much, guys, for having me on. You know, you're a great bunch of guys, and it's great to actually get the story of the Irish travelers over to the States.
Well, it's
really
important.
Good.
Listen, I have to tell you. I mean, I'm a reasonably educated guy, and yet I knew absolutely nothing about the Irish traveling community until about 15 minutes ago. And no, seriously, I learned something. I learned something.
We
you know,
did.
And that's why. That's in part why we have this show. That's the great thing about this show. We can begin talking about a TV series and we end up actually learning some things about a human rights issue.
Yeah.
You know, what's not to like? Anyway, Martin, thanks again. All the best in all your endeavors, and I hope we get to talk again
so
before too long, huh?
Yeah, listen, stay in touch, and I'll be listening in online. You know?
All right. Thanks, brother. Come visit us in the States someday.
On,
all right, thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too, Matt. All right, bye-bye.
And on this note, you're listening to Independence West, and I'm still Robert D. Thank you for this beautiful composition by the Jagger Richards Partnership from 1967, Their Satanic Majesty's Request. And the song, of course, Rohit, was... Rohit?
Oh, I have no clue which song it was.
Rolling Stones, She's a Rainbow.
Oh, wow. It's so beautiful, but I have no clue.
Okay, all right.
I didn't would be able to tell.
Okay, you just enjoyed the music. Listen, did you see that totally ridiculous Tony Parker shot last night?
Oh, man. You know, there was a lot of debate on that about that shot because some people said that he hit it when the buzzer was already gone and this and that, but...
Listen,
I thought the shot was amazing. You
know? Of course it is. I've had ESPN in my office the entire morning without the sound. They've basically been playing nothing else, you know. By the way, Stephen A. Smith was on both. The analyst for ESPN, you know, the big sports network here in the States, was on both ESPN networks ad nauseum the entire day. That's all that they've been talking about. Let me ask you this. Now that San Antonio leads 1-0, right, in the NBA final,
yep,
how much of a psychological boost is it for them against Miami?
If you ask me, I think it's a huge boost. And I'm a big San Antonio fan, so I think it's a great chance for them to win it in 6 or maybe 5.
But you're not even talking about San Antonio winning the series.
No.
You're talking about them actually winning in 6 or 5.
San Antonio to win it in 5 or 6 games.
So basically the idea that San Antonio is going to win, it's pretty much a given for you at this point. That's how much this game means.
No, I disagree with him. I disagree with Ray because you see, this is the final. This is not, semifinal or anything. This is the final, Roy. So you know that these guys are taking all this game seriously, then I don't even think they think they're going to win the series yet. They can't.
Well, this is the final, and that's why I'm saying this, because this is not playing against the Bulls, which when they won the first game and then went on to lose the next 4.
Mm-hmm.
But now San Antonio has a huge psychological edge over the Heat, and if the Heat loses next game, then you know you practically have, I think, 3 games in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very tough mountain to climb.
You see, the reason I like San Antonio, to the extent I follow the NBA, which actually isn't that much, is the collective system that they have. They don't have any mega stars. They just have a very good system that Popovich, the coach, has put together, you know, and he knows how to manage his players. And Parker, who certainly has developed into a star, but has nowhere near the star power of, say, someone like LeBron James, right? Or
well,
someone
actually,
of that sort.
Season,
made it happen.
When he started, he actually had, as they were saying, that MVP-like season until he, you know, sprained his ankle and then wasn't able to play for some time. So Parker has been a big factor this year. And don't forget, they still have Ginobili, who didn't really have a great game yesterday. And,
They've been together for such a long time.
So I think,
you know what's extraordinary? They've been together for such a long time. They were supposed to be the old team, and yet they're putting it together beautifully. Again, I hate making predictions. Right. So I'm not saying how the series is going to go one way or the other, but it's an extraordinary tale, no matter how the series turns out at the end.
Well, let me take your prediction and take Roger's prediction.
OK, Roger, go ahead.
Definitely. Miami's going to win.
I have a reputation to defend. I don't think predictions. Right.
Miami's going to win. And I'll tell you right now, Roy, it's going to be 3-1.
Listen, we're supposed to have David Lortolari, a French sports journalist, with us because, in fact, a lot of the week's sports roundups and sport news is French-centered, right? Tony Parker, French point guard, making the shot to beat the Miami Heat. Another bit of news I want to talk about, Zidane.
Mm-hmm.
Zidane may end up managing Real Madrid. I don't know if you've heard that, but the president of Real Madrid says he is a contender to manage the club.
Coach, right? Is it manager?
To be the coach, yes.
Coach.
I'm sorry. To use the American term.
Okay. Right?
In other countries, you say manager. Absolutely.
Okay.
So he's going to...
Personally, that will be very tough for me because he's my most favorite player.
Yeah.
And
you're more of a Barca person.
So, you know, it's going to be a tough choice.
Yeah, but he is a contender, apparently, although Perez did not tell the newspapers, or rather Spanish radio stations, you know, that definitely Zidane was going to get the job. Ancelotti, who coaches Paris Saint-Germain at the moment, wants to go to Real Madrid, apparently. French newspapers are saying that he decided 20 days ago or so, 3 weeks ago, that he wanted to step down in Paris after leading the team to the league title, but they don't want to let him go. And finally, French Open today. My goodness, the semifinals. I mean, Tsonga should be playing at the moment, I think. You know, we're nearing the end of our show.
He's down by two sets, and it looks so quite difficult for him to...
Tsonga is down by two sets? Hold on, Tsonga is down by two sets, you say? I'm sorry, Rohit, you say Tsonga is down by two sets at the moment?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it is going to be difficult. So David Ferrer against Nadal, so it looks like an all-Spanish final. So David Lotolari, unfortunately, as French sports journalist, his phone did not pick up. And we were going to speak to Emrik Izilkaya, who is the foreign desk editor at Hürriyet, the major Turkish newspaper. But he did, in fact, speak to us earlier before we put him, you know, on the air. But unfortunately, I think he must have been in the middle of Taksim Square where the demonstrations have been taking place against, you know, the Turkish government's, you know, urban development plans, because it was so noisy. We just, I mean, he could hear us barely. We could hardly hear him at all. So there was no way this was going to work. But definitely issues we're going to continue following. Anyway, it's been a pleasure having Curtis Bynum in the engineer's booth, Lawrence Ancier and Ogoma Ihejirika, you know, our interns who were with us here in the studio. Of course,
awesome.
Rohit Kulkarni by phone. Roger Muntu, who again, a new person, absolutely. And
a new person.
On time.
New studio, new person.
But listen, if it's not one person, it's the other. So France had to leave, you know, 10 minutes before the end of the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, Roger Muntu is now on time.
Right.
But now, of course, France has to leave 10 minutes early to go produce another show. That's a life, another day at the Voice of America. Another day on Independence West. You've been listening to Independence West. I'm Robert D, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone else. Ooh, whoa, I know that you don't know it, but you're fine, so fine. Fine, so fine. Ooh, whoa, oh girl, I'm gonna show you when you're mine.
Listening to Independence West on VOA.